All right. Well, today we're in the second week of a kind of an upside down Jesus teaching series called Give It a Rest. This is such a busy season, and rest is like the thing that you don't expect to hear in a crazy season. This holiday is almost on the way. As so many of us are kind of in the middle of a semester, if you're a student or if you got kids, give it a rest. And that's what we're talking about. You know, all of us, we live such busy lives, and we're always going and going and going. And it seems like today that there's always more required of us, doesn't it? It's almost like no matter what we do, it's almost like there's always more needed, whether it's in our family or in our work or whatever. And at the same time, we live in a world where there's increasing chaos around us. I mean, some of us experienced that as we were like watching Facebook during the election time. Like there's chaos all around us where people are flipping out on one end and people are celebrating on the other end. And so we live in a world where there's so much division. There's so much happening. And at the same time, there's more required of us. And so today in this series, what we're talking about is how Jesus wants to give us rest. How Jesus wants to give us rest for really in a way that truly satisfies. A rest that comes deep from the heart of our good, good Father, where Jesus promises to sustain us and to fill us and to truly let us rest in Him. And so that's what this series is all about. And if you were here with us last week, if you missed last week, here's what we talked about. We started out by talking about our need and how Jesus gives us rest from our pace. Last week was our need from our pace. And all of us, we talked about how we're not meant to be like that Energizer Bunny. You remember that guy that keeps going and going and going and going, right? Instead, we talked about the most productive, busiest work week of all time when God created the heavens and the earth. And God was so, so busy. In fact, really shows that work is a big deal. Work is important. God created the entire universe, the heavens and the earth in 6 days. He worked really, really hard. But then at the end of the craziest, busiest, most productive work week ever, God stopped. At the end of the week, He stopped and He rested. And it's one of those things where God invites us. We talked about this amazing reality called the Sabbath, where God invites us to live our lives like God modeled for us, where we work 6 days really, really hard, but then at the end of the week, we take time to stop from all of our working. That's what Sabbath means, to stop or to cease from working. Some of us, in order to experience rest, we've got to get off the treadmill of our life or the hamster wheel of our life. Some of us can get on the treadmill, right? You know, but get on the hamster wheel of our lives and stop running and running, to stop working. And in that, the whole point of the Sabbath is so that we can rest. So that we can worship and remember God, and so that in that we can enjoy life. That's what Sabbath is about. So that was our need to our rest from our pace. But today we're going to talk about another aspect that's really closely tied in that I think might be exactly what some of you came to hear. Some of us need to hear most from God. It's how Jesus can give us rest from our desire to constantly produce. How Jesus gives us rest from our desire to constantly produce. And maybe you've thought this before. Like, man, I've got to keep going. I got to keep making something happen. I got to make something happen in my work, in my family. I got to make stuff happen, or else what's going to happen? What's going to happen? If I stop making something happen, then what's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? What'll happen in my career? What'll happen in my reputation? Whatever. You know, some of y'all know in college, I was a music major, and hard to believe, but I did opera and stuff like that. And I was a vocal performance major. And performance is in the degree title. I was a vocal performance major. And as a music major, it was a lot of fun. Every single day we were learning not only how to shape our voice and stuff like that, but we were learning not only how to perform, but we were also performing almost all the time in front of audiences. And it was so much fun. I got to, I grew so much. And it took me where I ended up meeting some of the most incredibly talented musicians I've ever met. Got to sing with some incredible people. But we also got to go all the way around the world pretty much. Went all throughout Europe singing in some of the coolest cathedrals. And I remember pinching myself thinking, I can't believe we get to be here and doing this. It was really cool performing. And really learned so much about what it's like to pull through a performance, even when you're not at your best, how you pull through and you make it happen. How do you perform? And so one of the things that I learned really quickly in music school is this reality that so many people know who are on Broadway, so many people that know in opera houses and really in the performance world all over the world. It's just really this saying is that you're only as good as your last performance. You're only as good as your last show. Now, if you're a college football fan, you know this. You practice it every Saturday because it's one of those things where your team is like, they're winning and they're like the best team that's ever, you've ever seen take the field. Like they could beat anybody, you know, Tarzan, Goliath, whoever, they could beat them. But then all of a sudden you start losing the game and all of a sudden it's like, or you lose a game. It's like, man, I've got the worst team ever. I can't believe these guys, you know, they're good for nothing. No, they can't beat anybody. You're only as good as your last show, as your last performance. And this is something that people know, people say to kind of motivate you to kind of treat every performance as if it's the most important. But it's also something that we bring into our lives, this teaching, whether we say it or not, we start to believe this lie that our worth is defined by our work, that our worth is defined by what we do. In other words, who we are is maybe it's only as good as what we accomplish, what we do. And so it's one of those things where some of us have been on that hamster wheel where we've been running toward that. We believe that lie, like we're only as good as what we do, as what we did last. And so we're running and running. And maybe you experience this in your work. Maybe you're in a career where it's like, man, it's like, forget about everything I did back then. I've got to produce today and I got to keep producing. Or maybe it's one of those things where you grew up in a home where in some kind of way you got to keep producing. Maybe some of us grew up in a home where maybe with our parents or the people around us, that there was always this like expectation that you had to hit a certain thing, you had to produce in some kind of way. And some of us, the burden of that just kind of, you know, was always difficult to get through, the need to produce. And so this hamster wheel, as we've been running on this, trying to produce, it's one of those things where some of us, we don't even know how to get off. We don't even have to get off the hamster wheel to experience the goodness of God. This is the thing that we're talking about today. Producing is a good thing. As a former athlete, one of the things I know is that, one of the things God wired us to do is to produce, is to make things, to build things, to design things. One of the things, as a former athlete, we used to say is that we got to bring it. Right? Like we got to bring it every single day. And so, I mean, certainly, like, God wants us to work with excellence. He wants us to work really hard, not to be lazy, sitting on a beanbag chair eating Cheetos all the time, right? We're supposed to produce in our lives. But there's something else, that's really a spiritual condition for so many of us, where we can get out of balance and out of alignment with God. Where in some kind of way we can get swept up in this constant dance where, like, I've always got to produce. I got to keep going. I got to produce what's next. And so when we think about that, it's almost like I've got to get it done. I've got to push through. I want you to hear the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 11. We're going to read a little bit more of this today. This is an incredible teaching that Jesus gives in the middle of this desire to constantly produce. Here's what Jesus says, Matthew chapter 11, verse 28 through 30. He says this, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you, and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." And so what he's saying is for all of us who are weary, for all of us who have been carrying some kind of heavy burden, whether it's, you know, whether it's some kind of thing in our life or in our work, he's saying, I want you to come to me. I want to give you a rest that truly satisfies you at the very core of who you are, because I'm your God. And so when Jesus is talking about a yoke, it's not really a word that we use a whole lot, but he's talking about this heavy burden that's placed upon us. And he uses really two different word pictures to talk about a yoke. The first word picture is when you think of like a yoke that would be placed upon oxen. A yoke is something that's placed between usually two oxen. Sometimes it can be one. And it's this wooden beam that allows a farmer to pull a heavy load or to plow a field. And so if you're a farmer, it's a pretty good deal. You know, it's not a lot of work for you, but it's a lot of work on the oxen that you put the yoke on. You put the burden on them. And so you just picture this. These oxen have this heavy load that's placed on them, and they're meant to drive and to drive and to drive and to keep producing, to keep working. And so Jesus is saying, look, it's kind of like that in our lives, isn't it? Like it's like that so many times where this need to constantly produce, this heavy yoke that people place on us. And he says to us, you know what? I'm not like that. Like he says to us, like, my yoke is different than that. It's easy. And my burden, the burden I want you to carry, it's light. And so it means that with all the things that weigh us down in the world, with all the things that weigh us down in politics, with all the things that weigh us down with in our work and in our religious life, Jesus is saying, hey, I just want you to come to me. And to realize I'm not just another thing to be accomplished. I'm not just another thing on your to-do list. Come to me, for all of you who are burned out, and I want to give you rest. I'm not going to lay something on you that's another burden. That I want to give you freedom. And in fact, it's one of those things, I want to show you a better way where you can experience joy and you can experience rest, not because of what you do, but because of who I am. This is what Jesus is saying. So this is the first picture, this heavy yoke that's placed upon oxen. The second word picture is a little bit more figurative. A yoke was also known as a rabbi's yoke. A rabbi's yoke. And during this time, during biblical times, a Jewish rabbi, which is basically a teacher, all rabbis kind of had a different set of interpretation. It was called a rabbi's yoke. It was basically like the way that they would interpret the scriptures was seen as not only their teachings, but the rabbi's yoke. And so if you were to follow a particular rabbi, a rabbi would come to you, and if you were good enough, he would say, hey, why don't you come follow me? And I want to pass on what I do to you. I want to see if you can do what I do. And a rabbi would start teaching you all the things about his yoke, about his set of interpretation of how to live out the law of God. And oftentimes what a rabbi's yoke was is essentially it would take the law of God and it would put a fence around it to basically say, like, look, I want to make sure you follow God. And so instead of like getting close to the line, I want to put a fence around these laws so that it can help you to truly meet God and to follow God. But the problem is with this fence around all the rules of religion, so many times what it produced is this works-based system where instead of meeting with God, people miss God, trying to earn their way to him. And people started to think in their faith that it was all about like, you got to perform in order to be worthy of God. So this is what Jesus is speaking into when he says this. He says, in contrast to all those other yokes, all those other burdens, all those other spiritual things that people are asking you to do, it's almost like he's saying, hey, can we stop making this so complicated and so hard? Just come to me. Just come to me and take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. He says, I'm gentle and humble in heart. I love that because he reminds us of the character of God, that he's a good, good father who loves us so much and has plans for our lives. And he says his yoke is easy and his burden is light. This is the difference of what God calls us into. And so here's kind of the bottom line for everything we're going to be talking about today. It'll be on the screen. The bottom line for today is this: your work doesn't define your worth. Your work doesn't define your worth. Now, we know that in some kind of way, but we live so many times like our work defines our worth. Your work doesn't define your worth. In fact, your worth instead can be found in the reality. If you are in Jesus, if you belong to Jesus, your worth can be found in the reality that you're a child of God, that you're deeply loved by your good, good Father that we just sang about. And instead of trying to earn our way to God, it means that you don't have to work to prove yourself to God. You don't have to work to prove anything to God because Jesus' work for you on the cross proves his great love for you. You see how the difference is, my burden is light. It's not because he's got an easy yoke. It's because he carried all the burdens that we could ever have on the cross. He made a way for us to experience a lighter load because he's carried it. He's made a way for us to connect with him. And so this is what Jesus is saying, is that when we start to believe that our work defines our worth as a person, that we miss the very heart of God. We miss what God wants for our lives. And so we don't have to keep running and running and running, trying to produce something for God, trying to produce something for each other or for other people. And instead, a rest begins with this realization that we have a God, we have a good, good Father. And we don't have to prove anything to earn his love, to earn his acceptance, because what we produce isn't who we are. And so when we think about this, one of the things that came to mind for me is really a personal story. I about a year into planting this church, some of y'all know this church started from zero. Well, it started from two, me and Mandy, and with a big God and a big dream and just really a vision that God had for this place, for this church. And about a year after planting this church, it was a lot of work. We were reaching so many people who were like not connected to Jesus yet. So many people who were like, hey, we're brand new to church, And it was awesome. But it was one of those things, it was a lot of work. And it was one of those things, I loved it so much. And I remembered like a year after starting planting the church, I had been running so hard. We had worked so hard. We had stayed up with people like till 1 a.m. talking about vision and inviting people to follow Jesus in so many different ways. And I realized in the middle of this season that I had gotten to a point where I couldn't stop working. And I didn't realize that on my own. It kind of took my wife saying, hey, can you like rest a little bit? Like you don't need to work all the time, right? Sometimes our spouse is the voice of the Holy Spirit, sometimes not. But in this case, it was. And for me, I got to a point where even when I was on vacation, like we went on a 2-week vacation, and like for the whole vacation, I was almost always constantly thinking about how to like something about the fountain, something about the church. How do we produce more? How do we reach new people? How do we grow people? How do we make something better? My head was always going. I was always working, trying to produce. And it's kind of like I had the ultimate kind of, excuse. It's like, we're working for God. I mean, you know, that's a good thing. Like, it's okay to keep producing and producing. But finally, it was almost like the Holy Spirit spoke to me over a period of time and said, Andy, look, I'm glad that you enjoy what you're doing. I'm glad that things are going well in the church, right? But he's like, let's talk about that desire where you feel like you always need to produce. What is that? Like, what is that really in your heart? And it caused me to kind of reflect and to say, well, wait a minute. There's something going on where I'm missing the heart of God. And it's one of those things where it's one of the things where God showed me the very thing that I think somebody in here might have come. God may have brought you here just to hear this. Is that the need to constantly produce isn't really, it's not really just about your love for work. So many times it's really a spiritual issue of the heart where God needs to do a work in our heart. And I learned like really three things in that season that I wanted to share with you about when we have this desire to constantly produce, there's three things. The first thing that I learned is that we aren't really trusting God to provide. That we aren't really trusting God to provide. When we're always trying to produce, we're not really trusting God to provide. In fact, it's one of those things where some of us feel like, man, I've just got to hold things together. Like, that sounds nice to take a rest, right? Preacher, what do you know? But I've got to keep producing. I got to keep holding things together in my family, in my career, in my work. I got to keep holding things together. In fact, we think like, we don't say it out loud, but we think like, if I just take a break for a minute, then who in the world is going to take care of me and my family? Who in the world is going to hold, who else is going to hold things up and hold things together? And in that season, God may say to you something that similar to what he says to me. Hello. I mean, it's one of those things where one of my favorite verses is Colossians chapter 1, verse 17. And the Apostle Paul is writing this. And here's what he says. He says this, he or Jesus is before all things. That means before you even get to the next thing, that Jesus is already standing there. He's there. He's in it. That we can't ever get ahead of where God is. He's before all things. But here's my favorite part. It says this, and in him, all things hold together. In him, all things hold together. So I learned like, look, it's not our job to hold things together. It's not our job to hold things up and to hold things together because we serve a God who is powerful enough to hold it all together. I mean, think about how funny this is. We have a loving God who's not only powerful enough to hold the circumference of the world in his hands, but at the same time, he keeps the planets in orbit and in motion. And yet, even still, he knows every single thing that's going on in your life. He knows every single thing and loves you so much that he's working to provide and to love you and to display his love in your life. And so it's one of those things where we don't have to keep working and working and working, trying to produce and holding things together because we have a God who does that. In fact, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, the Apostle Paul tells a little bit about what it's like, what our job is to do. And here's what it says. It says this, I planted the seed, Apollos watered it, but God has been making it grow. See, I planted, Apollos watered, but only God is making it grow. Verse 7, it says this, so neither the one who plants nor the one who waters is anything, but only God who makes things grow. One of the things we got to learn in our lives is that it's our job to work and work, to plant and to water, but to step back and to trust God to produce from our labor. It's God who makes things grow. It's God who can provide and from all the labor of our hands. And so we don't need to get to a place where we're not trusting in God to provide. Here's the second thing I learned, that when we experience this constant desire to produce, here's the second thing it reveals. It means this, is that our work has become our identity. Our work has become our identity. Now, it's one of those things in our lives where all of us, you think about when you introduce yourself to people, what do you typically say? Hey, what's your name? You know, when you're in college, it's like, what's your major? But what people typically say is this, so what do you do? What do you do for work? And so, I stay at home or I do this. And so what you do is kind of a part of your identity, but it's not all of it. In fact, what we do is not all of who we are. Because here's the thing, if our work becomes our identity, then that means what happens if all of a sudden our work doesn't work anymore? What happens if we lose our job? All of a sudden, does it mean our identity changes? What happens if all of a sudden we get to a place where in some kind of way in the next project we had a bad day, that we didn't produce very well, and so all of a sudden if it's tied into our identity, then our identity is, hey, I failed. I'm a failure. I wasn't good enough. See how this kind of gets off of the heart of God. And on the other hand, in so many ways, this is how it works most of the time. In so many ways, we know our accomplishments. We know what we've done. We know some of the greatest things in our life. And so many times, if our work is tied into our identity, we oftentimes present the puffed up reality, the resume, if you will, of who we are to other people, trying to impress them because we think that our work is tied into our identity. And so we hold up our accomplishments and resumes and things that we've produced. And it's almost like we start walking around like Ron Burgundy, you know, from Anchorman. Like, I have many leather-bound books and I'm kind of a big deal, you know. We start thinking that in our lives, I'm kind of a big deal, right? And so you see how, like, it just gets off from the heart of God. You know, the Apostle Paul had the greatest resume there's ever been in his culture. He was kind of like, if you were to say, like, what is the mark of success during biblical times? The Apostle Paul had it. He was it. He accomplished it. If you want to see, like, for so many of us, we're running to get to the pinnacle of our career, of our life, or our family. The Apostle Paul reached it. He reached the pinnacle. In fact, here's a little bit about what he talks about, Philippians chapter 3. He says this. Though I myself have reasons for such confidence, if someone else thinks they have reasons to put confidence in the flesh or in the world, basically, I have more. Now, here's his resume. You can put your own resume in here. He says, circumcised on the eighth day. Most of us don't put that on your resume, right? Of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, in regards to the law, a Pharisee. In other words, I followed the law so well. Next, says this, as for zeal, persecuting the church. As for righteousness based on the law, I was faultless, he says. In verse 7, he says, but whatever were gains to me, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. I consider them, in other words, all that resume, all that stuff, all my accomplishments, I consider them garbage, that I may gain Christ and be found in him. See, this is the reality of what the Apostle Paul says. He's holding up his resume. He's holding up all of his accomplishments that was better than anybody else's during his time. And he's saying, look, guys, I've been there. I've done that. What you're racing toward, I've accomplished it. But I can tell you, compared to, like, with all that stuff, all that success, all that is garbage, it's rubbish, compared to the greatness of knowing Jesus. It's not saying all that stuff is bad. What he's saying is, like, all that stuff is really good, but Jesus is that much better. And so for those of us who are running to produce and to produce and produce, Jesus is saying, look, Paul is saying, you can find freedom in this reality, that you don't have to produce or have the best resume, because your identity can be found in Jesus and in his great love for you. And so for those of us who are striving to get to the pinnacle, Paul is saying, look, Jesus is so much better. Don't find your identity in your work. Find it in me. Here's the third thing that I learned in this whole pursuit, and maybe it'll be helpful for you, is that this desire to constantly produce shows the spiritual need, where we're looking for situations to satisfy us instead of being satisfied in God. This is where I was. I mean, so many of us know this, like, there's this thing in all of our lives where we always want to be at the next thing. We always want to be at the next step. The grass is always greener on the other side. And there were times where, like, we couldn't wait to move here to start planting this church. And then we got a year in and we're like, oh God, we can't wait until we finally get to this stage and this stage and then this stage. And you're like this. I mean, you've experienced that. We can't wait to get to that next place, to get to that next level of success, for a new situation to happen in our lives, and then we'll be happy. But then when we get there, we find we're not really satisfied there, and it's like, come on. And we're always waiting for the next new thing. And so it's one of those things where we're supposed to have dreams and aspirations, but there's this spiritual need inside of all of us where, in so many ways, if we look for situations to satisfy us, we'll never truly be satisfied. In fact, that's what St. Augustine once said. St. Augustine once said this, and we'll have it on the screen. It says this. It says, you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our soul is restless until it finds rest in you. It says this, you have made us for yourself, O Lord, and our soul is restless until it finds rest in you. In other words, if your happiness is all about getting to what's next, you're going to miss it. Your happiness and satisfaction can only be found in the reality of who Jesus is and what Jesus wants to do in your life, that he can fill and satisfy you. When you realize Jesus is enough, then no matter your circumstances or situations, you realize that you can be satisfied there. And so I don't know where some of you are today. I know it's kind of a heavy topic to talk about produce. And it's really something that where I learned a lot about following God and trusting him in everything. But I don't know where what burdens you've been carrying today. I don't know what burdens those are. Maybe you see, that's me. I've been on that hamster wheel trying to produce, like this need to produce constantly over and over and over, bigger, better, more. Maybe if that's you today, maybe you'd hear the words of Jesus, come to me. Come to me, all who are weary. Lay down your burdens at the foot of the cross and come find me. Come experience me. Because the truth is, if we lay down our burdens, as we lay down that burden, we can find that Jesus satisfies, that Jesus becomes our identity, and we can find that we can trust God to provide in all things.